Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you. It's Monday, the 6th of July. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, East African leaders meet in Tanzania to try and resolve Burundi's political crisis. But President Nkurunziza is unlikely to attend.
Without having Nkurunziza actually travelling to Dar es Salaam, it's impossible to exert that kind of pressure on him.
And a suspected Boko Haram suicide bomber kills himself and five other people in a church in northeastern Nigeria.
These boys are desperate. They want to show people that despite the movement of this command to Maiduguri, it cannot stop them from achieving their aims.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
And we begin in Burundi, where tension is mounting ahead of the announcement on Tuesday of the results of last Monday's controversial local and parliamentary elections. Over the weekend, the ruling party and its allies told a UN mediator who had been sent in to help resolve the crisis to step down. At least 70 people have been killed in Burundi in more than 2 months of violence, triggered by President Nkurunziza's bid for a third term, which his opponents say is unconstitutional. Apollinaire Niyiora reports from Bujumbura.
Burundians are split as to why the provisional results for legislative and local government polls held last week on Monday have taken more than a week. A civil servant I met in Bujumbura city centre said it could be because of the fact that the two elections, that is, legislative and local government polls, took place on the same day.
In the past, it was only one poll, but with two polls, there must be a delay. At the beginning, we couldn't understand, but considering their preparation, we should understand that it is challenging to organize two polls at once. When two activities take place once, the delay must happen.
In the past, the results usually came only one day after elections. A woman who I also met in the city center said the delay is suspicious.
If you look at the way polls took place and looking at the number of the days, it's a whole week. It's difficult to hope that the results to be announced will be genuine because you organize polls and days and a whole week pass, people start to think about many things. That polls have been rigged, that they are being cheated. Frankly speaking, I don't expect positive outcomes. They are probably rigging them because the period is too long.
Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party is widely expected to win, especially after the main opposition boycotted the election, saying conditions were not favorable. François Bizimana, spokesman of the opposition, Burundians Help Independent Coalition, said last Monday's polls were held without consensus.
We didn't participate in a session that would have set a date called 29th of June 2015 for a would-be poll in our country. We're still waiting for such an appointment with, of course, some conditions so that we can go to the polls. Otherwise, on the 29th of June 2015, we don't know the event that took place.
However, the ruling party spokesman Daniel Gerazi Ndabirabe said the party is open to dialogue only after the elections.
We can't withdraw from dialogue. It means after polls, as previously said, we will come back to the dialogue because there are issues that will someday require absolutely dialogue.
UN observers, who were the only international observers, have criticized the election, saying it was conducted in a tense political crisis and a climate of widespread fear and intimidation.
Apollinaire Niyiora reporting from Bujumbura. Members of the East African Community, the EAC, are to discuss the Burundian crisis in the Tanzanian city of Dar es Salaam later today. The EAC groups together Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania and Uganda. Crispin Mwakideo asked Phil Clark, lecturer in international politics at SOAS at the University of London, what he expected would emerge from this meeting.
I think we're already getting an indication that the East African community leaders meeting will amount to very little. It's in essence saying we need to assess the situation, we need to know how best to describe what's going on in Burundi, but everybody knows fully well what's going on in Burundi at the moment, which is that there is a climate of fear, a climate of violence, and it's a situation in which really the presidential election on the 15th of July could not possibly go ahead. So the early signs are that yet another East African community leaders meeting will amount to very little, and that I think is a real shame, and also casts doubt on whether the EAC in fact can play a productive role in these kind of very volatile situations.
President Nkurunziza was nearly toppled when he attended the first summit. He skipped the second, and it is not known if he will attend this one. Do these summits then mean anything if the main actor is not on the table?
The fact that Nkurunziza is very unlikely to attend this EAC meeting in Dar es Salaam, I think, does undermine the legitimacy of these meetings. The great hope of these summits is that it can put face-to-face pressure on regional leaders to behave in a way that is conducive to peace and stability. So without having Nkurunziza actually traveling to Dar es Salaam, it's impossible to exert that kind of pressure on him. It has to be said, too, that the EAC's response to what Burundi has been the weakest of all of the external powers. We've seen the African Union, we've seen the United Nations and the European Union and the donors for the first time in a long time put forward a very consistent message that what is happening in Burundi is unacceptable and that these elections should not go ahead.
What are the chances then that he will accept whatever the East African leaders come up with?
I think, firstly, we are unlikely to get a very strong message of condemnation or even a call for change from the East African community. And secondly, even if the EAC summit were to put out a strongly worded message, Nkurunziza is likely to ignore that. He's faced about as much criticism from outside actors in the last few weeks as he possibly can. Some donors have withdrawn some of their aid. But even in the face of that kind of external pressure, he has not changed his behavior in terms of the crackdown on political opponents, protesters and the domestic media. So given that he hasn't been moved to date, I don't see him changing his ways in the weeks to come.
Phil Clark from SOAS.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
On Sunday, a suicide bomber killed himself and five other people in a church in Potiskum in Yobe State, northeastern Nigeria. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but the city has been repeatedly targeted by Boko Haram Islamists during their six-year insurgency. Attacks in neighbouring Borno State have claimed more than 200 lives over the past few days. A statement from the office of President Muhammadu Buhari condemned the resumption by terrorists of attacks on places of worship. This report now from our correspondent in northeastern Nigeria, Al-Amin Muhammad.
According to eyewitness, a tricycle rider dropped off the bomber at the church premises where he disguised as a worshipper before carrying out his mission. The police in Yobe State confirmed the attack and the killing of six persons, including the bomber. Sunday's bloodshed is the latest in which Boko Haram members killing hundreds of people in separate attacks in two northeastern states of Borno and Yobe. Abubakar Baba, a resident of Gombe, described the situation as worrying and wondered what the new administration is doing to cover the insurgency.
The situation is very pathetic. We thought by the change of the new administration, things will change for the better. We hope and pray that the new administration will change its tactics. We are suggesting that they should improve in the provision of the sophisticated weapon, manpower, motivation, and among other things, so that they will quench this issue of our insurgency.
The Nigerian federal government on Saturday said the Nigerian security forces were dealing deadly blows to the Islamist terrorist group Boko Haram and such winning the war against the sect. The command center of the military was moved to Maiduguri with the view of tackling the menace. Ibrahim Aliyu, a political analyst, believes the insurgents want to prove that they have not been defeated.
These boys are desperate. They want to show people that despite the movement of this command to Maiduguri, it cannot stop them from achieving their aims. They feel they have overpowered our military. I think it's not yet time for us to start saying the command has no use in Maiduguri. Because I'm sure when they get settled and they start their operations, these things will stop.
There has been a sharp increase of suicide bombing, especially in Borno State, since the former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari took office in May this year, vowing to crush the insurgency.
Al-Amin Mohammed. Next, we head to northern Ghana, where local Muslims have been telling our correspondent Max Forsouk about the difficulties they face in religious observance during the month of Ramadan. They say their ability to fast is hampered by water shortages and power cuts.
It is Ramadan, and fasting is one among the cardinal pillars in Islam. The downing of the sun marks the end of Memunatu's fasting day. Today, Memunatu has prepared a local dish called tizet, which is very common here. It is made of corn flour.
Would you have loved to eat something different apart from this tizet?
I wanted to prepare rice, but it is expensive for me, so I have to manage the tizet.
To go along with the tizet, Salma, the daughter of Memunatu, prepared the soup with dry baobab leaves.
It's just kuka, dawa, maggi, pepper, and salt. That's all. There's no meat. No money to buy meat.
All this cost her 5 cedis. That's almost 1 euro. Poverty is just one challenge that many Muslims are facing in northern Ghana during this period of Ramadan. Frequent power cuts, water shortage, and rising cost of foodstuffs are other national problems that affect them during this moment of spiritual obligation. Hajja Saudatu, another woman in this compound, says,
sometimes you will want to prepare the food when you are still strong for the day and store it. But you will realize the light is not there and you can't do anything. It's a problem for us.
Concerns like this forced irate youth in Tamale to stage a demonstration some few weeks ago. The electricity was put up and they felt the move was unjustified and decided to go to the streets to protest. Al-Hussein Zakaria is a cleric in Tamale. He was getting ready to preach a congregation when I got to his office. He is not amused on the youth's behavior. For him, having electricity is luxury, and fasting is about sacrifice, not a luxury.
At the time it was proclaimed, the economies of the Muslim states was not the best, and yet the early Muslims managed to fast in the bad weather and under scarcity of food and water. So that gives us the impression that as a contemporary Muslims don't need to complain for too much.
But Muhammad Hadi, who sits under a tree outside and recites his Quran, disagrees with Zakaria and says times are changing and some other things must also change.
This time it is the light we use to do everything. You cannot say in the past light wasn't there or water wasn't, but now it's in our system.
It's our system.
Back to Memunatu's compound, in front of a giant mosque, people are thronging in to pray. This concerns may be genuine, but it is not limited to only the Islamic community in Ghana. There are national issues, and that cut across every society, no matter the faith you exercise.
Max Vasuk reporting. And now it's time to find out what's been happening to the Crossroads generation.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome back to Crossroads Generation. Glad you could tune in to our ongoing radio drama about a group of African teenagers.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation, our future stands today.
We're on our fourth season called Facing New Challenges. Last time, Paolo got angry with Anita when she offered him help with his daughter, Noni. Noni is disabled and she also suffers from epilepsy. Anita works at a school for children with special needs, so she knows all about how to support them. But Paolo wasn't interested. Paolo believes that Noni is bewitched and that only a sorcerer can help. Meanwhile, in Nikki and Marcy's relationship, things have taken a new turn. They've decided to join a support group in order to adapt better to life with Nikki's HIV infection. So far, they haven't told anyone in the family about it, but this secret they've kept so closely is just about to leak. Marcy's brothers Kadu and Banda came to visit and overheard them talking about Nikki's infection.
Marcy said, I knew you had HIV when we got married.
HIV? Nikki has HIV? Isn't that the bad disease? AIDS?
We have to tell Mom.
A few days have passed since then. Today's episode, Give Me a Chance, starts in the Tandika slums where Marcy is visiting her mother Lulu.
Mom, thanks for lunch. It was delicious. Great that I could just drop in between university. And yeah, I'm sorry I have to go already. Nikki and I have an appointment this evening. Oh, but before I go, let me help you with the dishes. Hey, Mom! Why did you put my plate and cutlery in a separate container?
Because you're a guest and you don't want to mix them to the children's. You know how dirty and messy they can be.
Really? Mom, you don't have to do that. I'm not a guest here. Come on, Mom. Go and sit down. I can't let you wash up while I'm here.
I said I'll do it.
Whoa. What did I do? Did I say something wrong? Mom. Mom, are you okay?
No, I'm not okay, Marcy, right? I'm not okay.
What's wrong?
You are what's wrong. You, Marcy.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about that so-called husband of yours, Nikki, you fool. You knew he had AIDS and you still went ahead and married him.
Mom, listen to me. Nikki does not have AIDS. Yes, he is HIV positive, but he doesn't have AIDS yet.
Get out of my house right now before you infect my children with that devil's disease. You think I'm a fool?
Mom, wait!
I said get out.
Okay, I'm going. You don't have to yell at me. Anita had better be on time, or she'll have to wait until after my show. Oh, there she is. Hey, Anita, over here.
Oh, hi, Tina. Hi, Tina.
Hi.
Sorry, I almost missed the bus.
Don't worry, you're not late.
Look, I know you're busy, so I'll get straight to the point. The other day, I met a girl who's in a very bad situation.
Okay.
She lives in the slum, and as well as being disabled, she also suffers from epilepsy.
Disabled? In what way?
Well, in our school, we work with children who had polio when they were younger.
Mm-hmm.
Noni must have had it too. She has all the symptoms, a withered leg, for example, and her arms are paralyzed. If only more people knew that you can vaccinate against polio.
Really?
Sure. But the saddest thing is that her father keeps her chained to the bed so that she doesn't hurt herself.
Really? Who would do such a thing?
Believe it or not, he thinks the girl's bewitched.
What?
Imagine. I suggested that she should come to our school, but he got really angry and sent me away.
Oh, no.
So, I started thinking, What if through your show we could highlight her story? Because I know there are a lot of families like this one who hide disabled children away.
You know what? This is something I'll definitely like to do.
Tina, that's great. I can't thank you enough. I just really felt for that poor girl.
Why won't people listen to me? Oh, Dan, stop exaggerating. All this talk about environmental protection, we don't see that there's any need. Oh, really? Well, if someone doesn't do something about these block drains very soon, we're all going to be in big trouble. My house is already starting to flood. If I don't unclog this drain, it's only a matter of time before I'm swimming in my own house. Ah. I don't know why nobody cares about this slum. Not the government. Not even the people who live here. Oh, maybe I could organize a big cleanup day. Get the whole community involved. That would certainly be a way of raising awareness about basic things we can all do to take care of our environment. Yeah. A message from Anita. Hi, Dan. Can I see you later today? I wonder what she wants to talk about. I still kind of like her. But actually, those days are long gone. And I'm pretty much of a mercy now as well. Tina, though, I really like her manner. She's so easy and confident. Maybe I should do something about it.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome to the Living Positive Support Group meeting.
Thank you
very much. Good afternoon. My name is Lucy, and I am HIV positive. First, let me thank all of you for coming. For those of you who are new here, this is the Living Positive Support Group, and you're all very welcome.
Thank you.
All of us here are either affected or infected by HIV, and this group exists to offer support and help people with HIV or AIDS.
Very true, yeah. Yeah.
We speak freely here, and anything that you say or hear stays strictly within these four walls. Isn't that so, my friends? Now, before I invite the first person to speak, I'd like to introduce our newest members. Everybody, let's give a very warm welcome to Nikki Jumbe and his wife, Mercy Msoto Jumbe.
Welcome.
Nikki and Mercy, please just introduce yourselves briefly to the group.
Hi. As you've just heard, my name is Nikki Jumbe, and I'm HIV positive. This is my first time here, so please bear with me if I don't share my experiences today.
Take your time.
And I'm Mercy, Nikki's wife. I'm not HIV positive, but I support people who are. And I believe they should be given a chance to live normally, because they are normal.
So, Nikki and Mercy, today you can just listen to what goes on here. And whenever you're ready to share your experiences, please feel free to do so. No pressure.
And we'd like to thank you too for tuning in. Well, now Mercy has started to experience being stigmatized by her very own mother. Let's hope she and Nikki get the support they're hoping for from the Living Positive Support Group. Until next time, bye-bye.
A reminder of our main stories. East African leaders are meeting in Tanzania to discuss Burundi's political crisis. A suicide bomber has killed himself and five other people in a church in the northeastern Nigerian city of Potiskum. And we've also been hearing about the challenges facing Muslims in northern Ghana during Ramadan. We welcome your comments on this program. You can send a text message to country code 49160957595510 and email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow. From me, Mark Caldwell, thank you for listening and bye now. We'll be right back.